Savadhutam Prajna Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padhan Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakan Svitamscha Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshri Prashubhanu Sudadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivastati Gaur Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Nice being here. Nice house. We're going to read from a nice book called the Bhagavad Gita to nice devotees about a nice person named Krishna. I'm going to read from the 7th chapter, text number 1, called The Knowledge of the Absolute. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Maya Saktam Anakparata Yogam Yunjanamara Shraya Asam Shayam Samagramam Yathagyasasi Tatschinu. Now hear from me, O son of Pritha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the nature of Krishna consciousness is fully described. Krishna is full in all opulences, and how we manifest such opulences is described herein. Also, four kinds of fortunate people who become attached to Krishna and four kinds of unfortunate people who never take to Krishna are described in this chapter. In the first 6 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material spirit soul who is capable of elevating himself to self-realization by different types of yogas. At the end of the 6th chapter, it is clearly explained that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yoga. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the absolute truth completely, but not otherwise. Impersonal Brahma Jyoti, a localized Paramatma realization, is not full knowledge of the absolute truth because it is partial. Full and scientific knowledge is Krishna, and everything is revealed to the person in Krishna consciousness. In complete Krishna consciousness, one knows that Krishna is ultimate knowledge beyond any doubts. Different types of yogas are only stepping stones in the path of Krishna consciousness, and one who takes the Krishna consciousness automatically knows about Brahman, Brahma Jyoti, and Paramatma in full. By practice of Krishna consciousness yoga, one can know everything completely, namely the absolute truth, the living entities, the material nature, and their manifestations with paraphernalia. One should therefore begin yoga practice as directed in the last verse of the 6th chapter. Concentration in the mind upon Krishna, the Supreme, is made possible by prescribed devotional service in 9 different forms, of which Shravanam, hearing, is the first and most important. Therefore, the Lord tells Arjuna, touch Trinu, hear from me. No one can be a greater authority than Krishna, and therefore by hearing from him, one gains the greatest opportunity to become a perfectly Krishna-conscious person. One has therefore to learn from Krishna directly, or from a devotee of Krishna, and not from a non-devotee upstart who is puffed up with academic education. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, this process of understanding Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, is described in the second chapter of the first canto as follows. Shrinvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravanam Kirtana Ridantakstohiya Bhajani Vidonoti Saritsatam Nashta Prayeshva Bhajeshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki Tadaridas Tamo Bhava Kamalobadayastraye Cheta eta anavidam sitam satve prasidati evam prasanamanaso bhagavad bhakti yogataha bhagavat tattva vijnanam mukta sangasya jayate vidyante ridhya grantish chijante sarva samshaya shiyante chasya karmani drista evatmanishvare. To hear about Krishna from the Vedic literature, or to hear from him directly through the Bhagavad Gita, is itself righteous activity. And for one who hears about Krishna, Lord Krishna, who is dwelling in everyone's heart, acts as the best wishing friend and purifies the devotee who constantly engages in hearing about him. In this way, the devotee naturally develops his dormant transcendental knowledge. As he continues to hear about Krishna through the Srimad Bhagavatam, he becomes fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. By the development of devotional service, one becomes free from the modes of ignorance and passion, and thus material lusts and avarice are diminished. When these impurities are wiped away, one remains steady in his position of pure goodness, becomes enlivened by devotional service, and understands the science of God perfectly. As bhakti yoga severs the hard knot of material affection and enables one to come at once to the stage of a samshayam, samagram, understanding of the Supreme Absolute Truth, Personality of Godhead. Therefore, only by hearing from Krishna or from his devotee in Krishna consciousness can one understand the science of Krishna. Sri Bhagavan Vacha Maya Saktam Rakparta Yogam Yunjan Manashaya Asamshayam Samagramam Hita Gyasasi Tatshinu. Now hear from me, O Sena Pritha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Maum Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutai Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskyadya De Satarne. Prabhupada was one time speaking to Professor Katowski at the university in Moscow. And he was explaining to him, he said, what is the difference between your philosophy and our philosophy? Actually, there is no difference, as strange as it seems. There might be a little difference between his philosophy and ours. But Prabhupada said, basically, you have to accept a leader. You're accepting Lenin as your leader, and we're accepting a leader also. We're accepting Krishna as our leader. Your philosophy is you have to accept a leader, and our philosophy has we have to accept a leader. So acceptance of a leader is actually the philosophy. Of course, there's a difference between Lenin and Krishna and the amount of knowledge they have. And if we follow Lenin, we'll go one place, and if we follow Krishna, we'll go a different place. But the principle of accepting leadership is there. Now, why we're accepting Krishna as leader? Because Krishna is giving us, at least in Bhagavad Gita, some knowledge, some factual knowledge, beginning with the fact that we're not this body. The material world is based on illusion, and therefore we can't say that just other people are an illusion, and they should read Bhagavad Gita. But we're not an illusion, because we don't at all identify ourselves with the body. All we do is have to think for a few minutes, have a little silent meditation, and see to what extent we identify ourselves with our body, what to speak of other people with their body. or other living entities with their body. This world is the world of identifying ourselves with bodies. The amazing thing is that no one has anything to do with their body, except that we so-called enjoy and we suffer according to the body that we have. That doesn't mean we're directly related to the body, we're indirectly related to the body through consciousness. So that may be important in one sense because we want to avoid unhappiness due to the body and we want to get some happiness out of the body. The only problem is that when we try to get happiness out of the body, we create future unhappiness which we're going to have to try to avoid. So the very thing that we're trying to accomplish now will create something in the future that we want to avoid. And when we suffer from the problems of material existence, then we become inspired to do something which will create some future auspiciousness, to go through some austerity, the very thing we're trying to avoid, and that creates an auspiciousness in the future where we get another opportunity to so-called enjoy. So material life is quite perplexing. When we lament and we feel bad and we go through some austerity, then we create good for ourselves. And we become enthusiastic to enjoy, we create something miserable for ourselves. So the material world is punak punas charavita charavanana, simply doing the same thing over and over again, and life after life experiencing the same thing. Srila Prabhupada once said that there's actually no past, present, and future. Sometimes people want to go to the astrologer and find out what their future will be. But we can tell everyone's future in 5 seconds. We can teach everyone palmistry. How many devotees want to find out their future in the next 5 seconds? You can raise your hands. No one wants to find out. Well, we'll tell you anyhow. So everyone can look at their hand. Anyone here knows palmistry? Anyone's expert at palmistry? We'll teach you palmistry very quickly. Everyone has a hand. You can look at your hand. See all those lines on your hand? I didn't put them there. They were there. So look at the hand. There's one line that runs from your index finger all the way down to your wrist, hopefully. You look at that. It starts at the index finger, and you follow it down, 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 and that's your future. The end. So we can tell your future. And we can teach everyone immediately how to tell the future, that everyone's eventually going to have to leave their body. Sorry to disappoint you. Everyone's expecting something auspicious. And then in the material world, they have to take birth again. So that not only we're going to have to do it this time, but we've been doing it since time immemorial. And basically speaking, we've been doing the same thing since time immemorial. Not only going through old age, disease, and then death, and then taking birth again to go through the same thing, but we've been eating and sleeping and mating and defending since we've been here. It's not that we take one birth, and in that birth there's no eating, there's no sleeping, there's no mating and defending. But every birth is the same thing. Maybe 5 billion years ago when we had a different body, we were eating slightly with our left hand because we didn't learn we should eat with our right. But we were eating. Maybe we were sleeping on the ground with some fur in our all over our body. But we were sleeping. Maybe we had some claws and teeth to defend with. But basically we were doing the same thing. And in 5 trillion years from now, if we're still around, hopefully not, we'll be doing the same thing, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Maybe in the heavenly planets, maybe in the hellish planets, maybe in downtown, something that looks like Houston. But basically speaking, the same thing will be going on. So this whole idea that in the future everything will be all right, that if we simply elect the right president, that he'll create heaven on earth for all of us. you won't have to go to work. You'll just put up your hands, and due to the mercy of the president, everything we desire will just fall out of heaven. Hopefully he doesn't hit us on the head on the way down. So this idea that in the future everything will be all right, actually, in this future, well, the next 10,000 years, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has predicted, or is predicted, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement will spread. But what is that movement that makes it auspicious? That instead of thinking about what it tells us in the newspaper, on the television, in the movies, we'll think about Krishna. That's what will make it auspicious. Not because people will do activities in the mode of goodness. People don't even know what the mode of goodness means nowadays. They have a complete misconception of what it means to be good. In South Africa, for instance, one devotee was telling me that the people there, they have one conception. They believe that to be good means you kill your enemy. If your enemy dies, he's bad because he's dead. And you're good because you're alive. So that's a very simple philosophy. Now, we may seemingly have a more sophisticated philosophy than that, but it's not really very much more sophisticated than that in modern society. That, more or less, we believe we're good because we have material resources. And people are bad because they don't. After all, that's why they're terrorists, or whatever they are. Because they're envious of us because we have so much. So they're bad and we're good. And more of a definition than that, it's hard to imagine. Someone is good because they pass their test. They get a degree in college or in school, they're good. It doesn't matter what they learn. They can learn how to create, you know, some kind of bomb that kills everyone except for themselves. But because they passed their marks in school, they got their degree, they're good. What they do with it, that doesn't really matter. But the standard is a little bit different from what good. Good in the mode of goodness, Krishna says, at least the mode of goodness in Bhagavad Gita is Tatra sadve nimaladvat prakasha kamanamayam sukha sangena bhananti jnana sangena chagnaga. That the mode of goodness means that people have real knowledge. Real knowledge means they have some conception of the difference between their body and themselves, and that other people are not their bodies either. And not only human beings are not their bodies, but also the animals and the trees and everyone else, all the living entities are not their bodies, and they should be respected as a temple of the Supreme Lord of Vishnu. Chanaka Pandit, great moralist, not even a devotee, but just a moralist, he says, Matri vat paradareshu paradwareshu lostravat atmavat sarabhuteshu yakpashiti sapanditaha. So who is a learned person who has knowledge? He says, Matri vat paradareshu. That one who sees every lady except for his own wife to be just like his mother. I don't think that's what they're teaching in school nowadays. Practically speaking, they're taught to see every lady, including their mother, to be just like their wife. And paradareshu lostrava, and to see everyone else's property like garbage in the street. Of course, nowadays, if you're a garbage collector, you make a lot of money. In New York City, people can collect bottles from the garbage bins and make $30,000 to $40,000 a year. Not a bad job, just picking garbage out of the bin. But people are not taught that, especially in the Western world. People are looking at they learn what they want to get by looking at what everyone else has. It doesn't matter what they have, that's not important. It's what everyone else has, that's what they want. Even we find the fashion, sometimes if they make a fashion where everyone's wearing clothes that have holes in it, then everyone wants to wear clothes like that. if everyone else is, you know, anyhow, we know that everything is not always so very logical and consistent within our present society. And as far as seeing every living entity to be just like one's own self, one sees everyone else in so many different varieties of ways. And we're all just directed, our conception of life in modern society, not the devotees or those who study some spiritual philosophy, but so directed by the newspapers and the radio and the television and the mass propaganda, including the educational system, just completely directed towards whatever concoction they come up with. The whole concoction about history, who is the good person, who is the bad people, all a complete illusion, all based on the Bali concept of life, basically speaking, based upon two conceptions of life, that good people are people who make money and enjoy their senses, and everyone else is bad. The good people are just like, who are the good people? If we look at history, if you win the war, you're a good person. And everyone else is bad who lost. That if the Germans would have won World War II, then all the English people and the Americans would have been branded as terrorists. Because factually, there wasn't much difference between what they were doing and what the German army was doing. One American general, Air Force general, he said, if we would have lost the war, I would have been tried as a war criminal. Because they were the first one to drop firebombs all over the German cities and kill tens and thousands of civilians. But they lost the war, so they're bad. And we won the war, so we were the heroes. So that's history. No, never mind that who can understand what the karma was of the people who were on either side who were performing the atrocities. It was none too good. So the so-called American heroes, they may be trees in Germany right now, for all we know. Or less than that. Fireflies. So one has to see through the eyes of Scripture to actually understand things clearly. And it is not some deep esoteric philosophy that only a few scholars can know. And otherwise, you know, how can we really know whether what it says in the Scripture is true or not? Because no one really believes Scripture. And, you know, we have to experiment and we have to experience. And then maybe we can know what the reality is. But Scripture, that's old-fashioned. They don't teach it in school. You don't get a degree by reading it. They don't talk about it in the newspapers. They don't talk about it in the television. They don't make movies about it usually. So why should we believe Scripture? Because it's the only thing which will actually tell us what's reality. And it's very simple. Our bodies are changing. Who can deny that? It's the most direct experience we have. And we ourselves are always the same person. So we're not the body. We're souls. So how much illusion we're in, how much modern society is misdirected, that the most obvious, clear, simple thing that we experience, people can't understand it. It's a great mystery. And even they want to talk about reincarnation or transmigration of the soul, they have to go through, you know, regression therapy. They have to have investigations of little children with past lives, telling about their past lives. And still people don't believe it. They don't believe it because the most obvious direct thing that our bodies are changing, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, and we're not the body because we're not changing. That's very difficult to understand. And what to speak beyond that, that this world is controlled by superior power. That how can anyone with any intelligence believe that it is by accident that this sun, millions of times bigger, or at least thousands of times bigger than this Earth planet, just so happens is moving in exact orbit. That every day it rises at a predictable time and sets at a predictable time, and it's been going on for thousands of years like that. So much so they can predict exactly where the sun's going to be in the next 100 years. We can't even predict where we're going to be 5 minutes from now. And we're so intelligent. And yet the sun is so perfect, so perfectly moving in an orbit that it's predictable for hundreds of years what it's going to be. And our experience is that although we're not this body, what a marvelous creation the body is. We eat food, and without knowing what's going on, unless you hear a few burps or bubbles, we don't know exactly what's going on. We may get some feedback once in a while, what's going on. But the food is being digested. It's being the necessary parts are being assimilated. The unwanted parts are being eliminated. Such a marvelous contraption. In every way, we can look at the material world and see what a marvelous creator it must have. Unfortunately, because people are envious of the creator, they create a world where the only purpose is to deny him, try and imitate him, try and take his place, and eliminate him the best we can. Unfortunately, it's just like an ostrich. Everyone knows an ostrich is a big bird. So when it sees an enemy, it finds a hole in the sand and puts its head in. Say a big lion's coming to eat the ostrich. So to protect itself, because it has a very long neck, it puts its head into the sand and it starts meditating. It's not there. It's not there. I'm safe now. I'm in the sand. But this huge body is sticking out of the sand. So what is its safety? Yes. So similarly, the current society, everyone's denying there is no God, there's no laws of nature, I'm free to do whatever I want, you know, everything, whatever I do is good, I won't get any reaction, we're all going to heaven, one class of people think, doesn't matter what we do, any sinful activity we do, because Jesus died for us, therefore we're all going to heaven anyhow. I have my platinum Jesus credit card. So I charge all my sins to him. And he pays for it. Another class think, oh, when you leave the body, you are the body, everything is just annihilated. So there, no one could catch you, no one can make you pay for your sinful activities. So there's many different philosophies, but that's not the way things work here, because we're not the body. People don't want to hear about that sometimes. Some people do want to hear about it. But if we're not the body, then there's a possibility that we may have to get the reactions for what we're doing here. And indeed, we can look around and see that not everyone is in a human form of life. That there are many squirrels, there are many rabbits, there are many trees, there are many insects, there are many plants. And they're also changing their body, and there's a living entity within the body. Chandra Bose, he did an experiment, and he showed, as many other scientists later on showed also, that plants have feelings. That they've done experiments, they've had plants in a certain room, and when people who mistreated them, say burnt a leaf or something, walked into the room, the plant would start registering negative feelings. It'd get depressed and get an anxiety that this person's there. And other plants, or the same plant, if someone walked into the room who was playing music to the plant or caressing its leaves, then it actually starts registering feeling positive, that was feeling good. And they've shown that plants, if you play nice music to plants, they grow, they flourish. And if you play rock music, they wilt. Classical music is in between. Devotional music is the best. There are souls like we are, they just have a different body. So why do they have a plant body? Why do some souls have an animal body? How does this all come about? So according to Bhagavad Gita, that they've taken their body according to the law of karma. And therefore, if it is true we're not the body, and if it's true that there's a God and he's speaking in Bhagavad Gita, then our security that we're going to the heavenly planets, we're going to live there no matter what we do here, it may be wrong. And the fact that we're going to merge into nothingness also may be wrong. It may be a fact that we might come back as a tree, hopefully in Vrindavan. But we may come back as a tree, and we may have to stand there in the winter naked, or in the summer, scorching heat, and we may have to do that for not a few years, for hundreds of years. So that is not very good. If you took a survey, and everyone's interested in surveys nowadays, if you asked the soul in the tree body, where were you thinking of that you were going to go after you leaving your last body, I'm sure most of them would have thought, I'm at least going to heaven. But they didn't quite make it there. The result is, or the conclusion should be, that when Krishna says we should fix our minds upon him, in the beginning it may not be very easy to focus our mind upon Krishna's transcendental form, or his quality, or his pastimes, etc., which is the highest goal. But we should fix our minds upon his conception of this world, the world we're living in, so we can live our lives in such a way as not to become deluded by ignorance, and therefore utilize this body, our mind, and our words in a way which will not be very auspicious for ourselves or auspicious for others. That much we should hear about, so we can improve our living condition, materially and spiritually, and actually make this life meaningful. If we don't hear from Krishna, then there are so many allurements in present society. Everyone's giving their philosophy. And most of the philosophy is proclaiming, let's enjoy. That's the more or less the philosophy in America. The world's biggest supermarket. It's a continuous mall with so many stores in it. Just make some money, and if you don't make money, don't worry about it. Just get a credit card somehow or another. Get a credit card and spend it and enjoy. Spend it and enjoy. But what is actually this philosophy? It's the same philosophy as the fish in the ocean. It's the fish philosophy. In this way, the fishermen, and they're proud of being fishermen in this country, they take their hook, they take their bait, they take their hook. It's very elaborate. All the paraphernalia for fishing here. And they put this bait on it, on this hook. And they put the bob down into the water, reel it out, and they just bob it up and down to the fish in the water. Come and enjoy, come and enjoy, come and enjoy. And the foolish fish looks at it and looks, wow, look at that. That's far out. It's a feast day, and the kind fisherman's inviting me to come and enjoy. So he takes the bait, gets hooked, and gets dragged out of the water, thrown into a fire pan, and fried. So that's the result of his philosophy. Come and enjoy. Come and enjoy. He winds up fried. So here in America, it's come and enjoy, come and enjoy. But ultimately, everyone gets fried. So Krishna is saying, that we have to realize that. And instead of fixing our minds completely, you know, on this current philosophy of Western society, that one should actually divert his attention from this misconception and try and focus it upon reality, beginning with the fact, meditating upon the fact, that my body is changing. And that not only means that I'm not this body, it also means I'm not going to be here forever. That I may be in a very nice country, we may somehow or another gotten our green card or whatever else, and come to the promised land. But we can't live in the promised land forever. We're going to get kicked out of the promised land, and we may not get into the land that we thought we were promised either. The unpromised land. So we should be thoughtful. Where am I going next? Not I made it. Oh, I'm safe. The fox went away. I'm in the land, never land, and no one grows up here. No one dies. It's some special place. They're going to pass a law against death next week. And we got the technology to enforce it. No, one should be thoughtful, where am I going next? And if we study Bhagavad Gita, we can get a good indication. According to our activities, we'll get our next destination. It's not so complicated. Then we'll get some interest in what we can do to improve this life and improve our next life also. And then our life actually becomes meaningful. And for those who don't think there is any next life, or it doesn't really matter what I do in this lifetime, they're in for a great deal of disappointment. All the people who go to their medical and find out that they had this disease and that disease, they're all thinking, it couldn't happen to me. I mean, I was a good person. I mean, I may have smoked a few packs of cigarettes every day. I may have drank a little bit of alcohol. And, McDonald's happened to be my favorite restaurant. And having one or two girlfriends is not so bad. I mean, I'm pretty chaste compared to my friends. And gambling, well, that's how you enjoy. A lot of good entertainment at the casinos. So then one is shocked. How is it possible that a bad thing could happen to a good person like me? I mean, I was pretty saintly compared to everyone else. There couldn't be a God. If there is a God, how could it happen to me? That proves there was no God to begin with. So everyone's shocked. And they find out that people actually, even in America, they die. It's almost unbelievable. Someone asked me, I was giving a class at the yoga studio today, and they asked me about Buddha. So someone mentioned that Buddha, he was a prince, and in his palace, they tried to make it so he never saw old age, he never saw disease and death. And then he went out into the world, and he saw it, people actually grow old. People become diseased and people die. So America is imperfectly trying to become like that. If there's an accident, you can see everyone stops their car because they want to see some blood. They never saw blood like that. Only nowadays, of course, on television. In the safety of your home, you can watch it. disease, they whisk them away in the ambulance to the hospital. The last thing in the world you want to do is visit your relatives or friend in a hospital and see that some people actually get sick. And some people die. And they, of course, nowadays in America, the old age home, just put them in an old age home, all the old people. So you don't have to think about it, that it might happen to you. As unlikely as possible, it might happen. Of course, don't worry about it, because just in a few years, they're going to have an anti-aging pill. You just take the pill and you grow younger every day. And if you get bored in a few hundred trillion years, you might think of growing a little older. Or getting a new body, because after all, by that time, everything will be plastic. Whatever was wrong with you, they'll just take out that organ and put in a plastic one. You'll get a plastic heart, plastic lungs, plastic brain. You'll think plastically. There may be some material progress in some ways here, but actually it's almost like it's a fairy tale. And people are buying into this fairy tale, literally buying into it, supporting it, building monuments to it. They have these huge museums where they have dinosaurs there. They look at the dinosaur. It's real. There is no God. There's a dinosaur. Look at this huge thing. It never talked about dinosaurs in the scriptures. Therefore, we have the reality. Because they don't tell you they took a bone that big and they made a dinosaur that big out of it. And they don't tell you that there's still dinosaurs still alive roaming around on the planet that people have seen. They don't tell you a lot of things, but they think, oh, it doesn't mention dinosaurs. And so they build these huge monuments to the dinosaurs. People they can't even eat in some places. But, you know, they don't go to church, they don't go to the synagogue, they don't go to the temple. They go and visit the dinosaurs and the museums to have their darshan. And they bow to these huge, you know, cathedral-like structures, showing you what the real history is, that we all evolved out of the apes and the real history came out of nothing, etc. And people go there and worship materialism. They're born again materialists. Of course, they don't know that they're going to become born again and again and again in the material world. But if you go and you examine their philosophy, you'll find it's just all foolish. It makes no sense whatsoever. It's all science fiction. Just to give one quick example that Prabhupada also gave. Just like they say that we all evolved out of apes. So according to that philosophy, as you probably heard before, well, what is our practical experience? First of all, they never found any evolution in the rock strata. If they look at it, there's no links, there's no evolution. There's horses. Of course, they show in the textbooks a little horse and it gradually evolves to a bigger horse. They don't tell you that big horse was found in a rock strata much deeper than the little horse. So according to the strata of the horse evolution, it's more like this. There's no pattern at all. But they put it together so you feel good. They don't tell you there's no links between the different species. In other words, the rock strata shows that there is no evolution. There were horses millions of years ago, and there's still horses. And as that Sataputra Prabhu's book and Drudha Karma book points out, they found human skulls or human pottery in rock strata, which is billions of years old, but to speak of hundreds of millions of years old. So the whole history of the human race based upon the rock strata doesn't show evolution at all. It shows that there's cycles. And then they've never produced anything called mutation, producing anything other than the same species. They've taken these acidophilus flies, whatever they're called, and they bombard them with radiation trying to change them. And sometimes they get three eyes and sometimes six eyes. And then they keep on bombarding them and they wind up to be the same as they started out with. They don't become a giraffe or something. So there's no mechanism for evolution. No one has ever seen evolution. In England, they thought they saw something like evolution because they had all these white moths in England and they all turned gray after some years. But then they found out they turned gray because of all the pollution in the air. But look. So let's examine actually what our history, our experience of evolution is. Just like everyone here has a father and had a father and mother. And everyone's father and mother had a father and mother. So is there any history in our ancestry that we can trace back, that we find out that our great, 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 all the way back grandmother was a monkey? Does anyone know of any historical records when you trace it back far enough? You find out that you're looking through your family album, you come and you go, wow. Who's that? Well, that's Aunt Lucy. And that's Uncle Harry. Wow, they look pretty strange. And you turn the page, what's that? That's Mickey Mouse. So then you start questioning your parents, and you find out that actually your great-great-grandfather, all the way back, the farthest that you can go back was a rock. And as the story goes, according to your family tradition, Aunt Rock meant Uncle Rock, and they fell in love with each other. And they produced a mouse. And the mouse later on gave birth to a monkey. And the monkey, this monkey happened to be swinging from your family tree. Does anyone have any history like that that they know of? They call that science. But actually, it's science fiction. But the whole society is based upon that conception, faith, that we evolved out of matter, there was no creation by God, that there is no laws behind nature, there are no commandments we have to follow. The only commandment is pay your bank, pay your bills, pay the credit card, at least the monthly interest on it, or else you're damned. We're going to send you to hell. We're going to take your credit away. So that's practically the only commandment. You know, try to be as nice as possible, whatever, as nice as you feel like. If it makes you feel good, then be nice to people and pay your bills. But there may be a few other laws behind this world than they are letting us, most people know. And if we examine their philosophy, the culture, the history, everything else, we'll find out that Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna is saying, fits our experience, fits reality much closer than so-called modern history, so-called modern philosophy, modern culture, modern understanding of reality. And it's much more auspicious to follow Bhagavad Gita than to follow Mickey Mouse and Captain Kangaroo. Prahlad Maharaj said, Kamara acharat pragyo, Dharman Bhagavataniha. From the beginning of life, one should hear this philosophy. Unfortunately, that's not always the case. I grew up with Captain Kangaroo. I don't know who you know who that is. And Mickey Mouse. Nowadays, I don't know Sesame Street. I don't know who's in nowadays. But they're usually not transcendental philosophers. Minnie the Pooh or something. So thank you very much. Are there any questions? You look like you almost have a question. Okay, one moment of silence, 1 minute. Yes. I thought I covered practically everything in the class.
I was wondering, how is it that you learned or you memorized the Krishna book and the Bhagavad Gita?
Well, I'm a sannyasi, I have nothing else to do. You got to do something.
So how long do you have to go to reincarnation?
How long? As long as we like.
it has to be entered.
Maybe, but I think most of us shouldn't be around to see what the end is. It's going to be a long time.
Is that your karma keeps you in reincarnation?
Yeah, as long as we want to be here. As long as we want to be the laws of the creation, think ourselves to be the laws, as long as we want to enjoy this material world, then we'll come back that long.
So it's up to us, not up to the...
Oh, it's completely up to us.
No, but since you keep going in reincarnation over and over again, like
yeah.
You said, and you go in different shapes and different bodies.
Right.
According to your karma.
Right. But it's up to us what body we get.
No, how it's up to us, because it's not up to us, because our karma.
Well, just like this. We're living here in Houston, Texas. So it's up to us whether we're in jail or not. Now, if we find out what the laws of Houston, Texas are, and we follow them, then we'll stay out of jail, and we might get a position as a teacher or a doctor or a lawyer. We follow whatever is prescribed to do that.
So that's the karma.
That's karma. If we decide that we don't like to follow the law, we're going to become a renegade, then when the police arrest us, then we're put into a jail for as long as we want. We don't want to get let out of the jail. We like the jail. We can rebel in the jail too. They'll increase our prison cell for as long as we want.
So it's not up to us, and it's up to the law.
No, the law is there already. It's up to us whether we want to follow it or not.
No, but
the law is not asking you to go to jail. The law is not advertising. You know, come to jail, get free room and board.
That's the same thing repeats all over again. It's our karma.
There's laws. We're not independent. But we can't, who else can we blame it upon? Just like in this city. If someone gets arrested and go to jail, and the prisoner goes to court, the criminal, and he says, wait a second, it's not my fault, it's your guy's fault for making all these laws. If there was no law, I wouldn't be a criminal.
So the Lord has made the way of our life to live.
Yeah, of course.
So
that's why he's the Lord.
That's the laws. And those laws are made by the Lord.
Right.
So if you live by that, then you are free of the karma, free of the reincarnation.
Right. That's it.
And then you go where?
Well, we go wherever Krishna wants us to. But we're not in the material concept of life.
We could
go to the spiritual world where no one has any conception or no one is at all entangled in materialistic life. Everyone there is fully engaged in the loving service of Krishna. And
that's in our Gita. Once you're free of your all these reincarnation thing, then you go and live with Krishna.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah. There we actually have freedom. Anything else? Okay, we'll stop there. Grantaraj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.